Descent. I'm your host, Iffy Whiteaway, and sitting across from me, as always, is
Danny Fernandez.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing good, Iffy. I'm feeling... Why'd you giggle?
Because you're like clutching yourself as you said it.
Yes, because we're joined by someone that I'm really excited about.
Oh, me too. Very excited. Yeah, she's great. Good friend of ours. Host over at Collider Heroes. You do Callisto 6 at Geek and Sundry. Mm-hmm. Was on Valiant for a spell.
Heck yeah.
The Wednesday Club at GNS for a bit.
Ooh, and she's now at DC Daily.
Yeah.
And she was on an RPG show with us as well.
So,
oh, y'all.
Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together wherever you are, in your office cubicle, on a train, or just sitting on the sidewalk for Amy Dallin.
How Yay! You
doing? Hi, I'm feeling astonishingly welcomed, just welcomed beyond my ability to cope. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Thanks for coming through.
Yeah, so I think you and I met when we did that show together.
Vanquished.
Yeah, Vanquished. Uh-huh. It was a Valiant. It was after the Valiant comics, but You also worked, I think, at that time. You were working at a comic book shop as well. I mean, how did you get into, when did you first pick up a comic? Like, what was your first memory of comics?
Oh, yes.
Of when you got into comics?
So I do work at a shop. I have worked there for many years. But I think, like, the comic thing with me goes back mostly as far as I can remember. It was, you know, I think we all read whatever was around. It's like one of my weird side missions is to remind everyone that they already read comics. Because if you read Archie, or if you read newspaper comics, or if you grew up on Asterix and Tintin, like, those are all comics. Comics have been in your brain. But I definitely hit, like, the X-Men the Animated Series and Batman the Animated Series, like, and then just off to the races after that. Yeah, comics quickly followed.
I grew up on Calvin and Hobbes.
Yes.
Ooh, wow.
That was my jam. And the Sunday Funnies. Like, my dad and I used to have a, like, coffee. He would take me out on, like, and Sunday mornings. We would go and get coffee, like, me and him, and he would give me that section of the newspaper. It was always my favorite. That and Far Side.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I would read, as I wanted to read comics, quote unquote, so bad. But my dad, you know, never was putting money out for it. He was like, you should read books. And I was like, God, parents, just know, reading comics is reading. Don't fall into my dad's trap. You can have a son that's a doctor instead of a comedian. But I do remember it was Sunday Funnies for me. And then one time I was in a Thrifty, you know, remember those? And they were selling comics, and I was able to grab Bloodshot and Spawn. Those were like the two I grabbed, because of course it was the 90s and I was a young boy, so I was like, murder.
That was the, like, as a kid we'd be on road trips, and it would be, you'd just be at, like, at a gas station, and there'd be like a 3-pack of random comics, one issue of Magnus Robot Fighter and one issue, and you would just be like, I'll figure it out, I don't know who these people are, but I will, you know. And there was some of that joy of just, like, whatever you happen to come across, we were just so hungry for it.
Yeah. Also, there was that short stint where they had the Spider-Man comic in the Sunday Funnies, and that's, I lived for it, but it would, like, it wasn't consistent, whatever, probably because my dad wasn't getting the same paper, but, like, sometimes it would be there, and that's what initially was like, oh, I need to find Spider-Man.
Yeah, it is so funny because we don't really consider, I think, like, Garfield and Peanuts and stuff to be comics, but they are.
They absolutely are, and they grow out of the same traditions. Like, in some ways, newspaper comics came first, and then they were like, what if we bind them up in magazines? Maybe that'll work. And, you know, the whole thing fed into itself, and now webcomics are kind of inheriting both legacies. It's super fascinating.
It's crazy to see how much the webcomic industry has blown up. You know,
Yeah,
I have a friend, Austin Marie. She does a webcomic, Soul on Hold, and she has, like, over, like, 100,000 people ready to read it. And I was like, man, I didn't know the community was booming, because I tried to do webcomics when I was in high school. It was called Evolution Mangas. Yeah, because I was a weeb, so I was like, we're not making comics.
Manga's
we're
plural?
Making manga. Yeah, manga. It was real cool, too, because, like, the site I mentioned before, Polycarbon BBS, there was one guy from the site who I knew from there who did comics, and I was like, hey, just send them to me, and I was just going to upload pages to this website because I learned how to make websites. And they're still there. I mean, don't go to – you can Google Evolution Mangas, make sure all your ad blockers are up, because it is one of the – because it's so funny, because – websites are almost like buildings. If you just leave them online, like, that site has been live since, I was in high school. It's still live to this mm-hmm. day.
That's amazing.
And now it's just infected and slow. It's just like a building that if it was unattended for all these years, it's just...
Well, rats are living in that website.
Yeah. Did you hear about how MySpace finally deleted?
Yeah.
And everyone's like, thank God.
I know. Nothing's coming back.
I mean, there's
me.
A ton of people that were really upset because they had, you know, I guess high school photos and things on there.
Oh, yeah.
But I think like 99% of us were like, cool, don't have to worry about yeah. that ever again. And that... my angsty, like My Chemical Romance, you know, bio and something corporate, Jack's Mannequin. That was my, that was
what?
My, oh, yeah, like SoCal rock. Because I grew up here.
Yeah.
And in a... in Orange County and then later in Texas. But yeah, so that was my angsty, like Warped Tour years.
Yes. And you're saying this those. Is gone now? I'm so sad.
Yeah. No, I mean, but that rock isn't as prevalent, I would say, today as it used to be. And I definitely don't go to although we did go to Warped Tour, if you remember last year. Right? We went to Warped Tour because Valiant, who we had our show with, was sponsoring Warped Tour. It was really cool how comics and music crossed over in that way, that it became like more mainstream with them because they, Valiant had a bunch of their characters and stuff at Warped Tour.
Yeah.
And they were on all of their their flyers and stuff. So I did go recently.
So full circle. It was all relevant work experience.
Isn't
that
weird? That
you were building up.
Mm-hmm. Super mm-hmm. full circle. I guess I wanted to know, how did you move from just liking comics to doing what you do now? I mean, Iffy and I had an episode about how we got into it, but how did you make that jump to like being at Geek & Sundry or working at a comic book store? Like, what made it turn from just a hobby to your career?
That's a really good question, because it was always that, like, that thing that I was doing instead of whatever I was supposed to be doing, obviously. I did not major in comics, but I, you know, I had always been interested in entertainment stuff, and I moved out here after school, and I needed just like a day job. And it was just that, you know, you always had that like, well, I'd love to work in a bookstore, a comic book store. And I got lucky and I asked at the right store on the right day, a lovely place called House of Secrets in Burbank. And that love and that joy kind of took over. And at the same time, I was studying entertainment, I was studying communication and all this stuff. And just the sort of right weird sequence of dominoes fell that I got to know some of the folks over at Geek & Sundry, and they were launching, this is ancient internet history now, they were launching a vlogs channel, like a side channel, which would be people sort of making videos about their own interests. And I had never made videos before, but I at that point had accumulated like a lot of hours of talking about nerd stuff, because we can't be stopped. We all accidentally develop that skill because we're like, okay, we got 10 minutes at lunch break and I'm going to convince you that this is awesome. You know, mm-hmm. it's a muscle that to some extent we all hone because we are unstoppable monsters of loving things. And so somehow that all just came together, and I learned enough about making videos to start shooting some stuff in my bedroom and talking about comics. And then just one thing led to another. And now I've gotten to do a whole lot of explaining nerd stuff and things I care about to folks. And we've landed in this bizarre world where we all met each other playing an RPG show. And it's all very unrealistic, but really, really fun.
Super unrealistic.
Yeah. I know, like, that's one of the things where it's like, at this point in our careers, if we were to go back to our younger selves and try and explain what we're doing now, they'd be like, you're a liar, charlatan. Who's trying to get me to not focus on school so that I can, so you can take my life.
Yeah. And yet, here we are.
Speaking of taking life, Shazam takes life in theaters.
I really thought that was going in a murder direction.
Yeah, yeah. In the coming days. And now we're here to talk about the origins, the comic book. And if you've never heard of Shazam and you're going in blind, guess what? We're going to give you, you know, a little info about Shazam. And me and Amy talked about this during my Collider's Heroes appearance. If there's something you really wanted to just talk about regarding Shazam, and I think that's a fun way to start off, which is the lawsuit.
Yes. Okay, so that thing I mentioned about, like, how can I make this interesting? I am fascinated by this because the short version is that Shazam used to outsell Superman. DC sued him out of existence. Then eventually they bought the rights and now they can't use the name. And it's just like the full version of that. Oh, and like as a side note, Out of Left Field indirectly inspired one of the greatest temporarily lost works in comics because Alan Moore's Miracle Man is traced back to this exact same legal nonsense. So I don't know how deep into this can we go?
Well, we touched just a tiny bit. We touched on it in our Captain Marvel episode because there's no way to not talk about it because he was originally Captain Marvel. Mm-hmm. So Tiffany and I touched on it a tiny bit. But so essentially he was at Fawcett Comics,
yes,
right? So that was his, when he originally, that was where we trace everything back to. But it's essentially, they were copying Superman. Is that correct?
It's one
ish.
It's one of those, like, we can't exactly pull them up and ask them, but how much are folks listening? Maybe should we some familiarity with the golden age of comics?
Yeah, sure, go ahead. Yeah.
So comics as we know them, like binding them up in magazines and telling serialized stories, kind of come into their own or come into existence in the late 1930s. And like the big guy, the first one out the gate, the somehow just immediately set it off with a run was Superman in Action Comics number one. And that's 1938. By whatever cover date, February 1940, I want to say, there have already been like he's immediately a sensation. He's selling like crazy. Oddly enough, they designed him to be a newspaper strip. It didn't sell, so they pasted it together and made a comic out of it. But he's immediately a sensation, and people do legitimately start running to be like, we need a Superman. Get us a Superman. And you can interpret that to mean literally copy Superman, which some people definitely did, or you could mean we would like a hit comic, make it about a strong guy. And somewhere in the middle of that, you get Fawcett Comics, who set out to create, if you look at the covers of the first issues as we know them, it's a strong guy in a cape throwing a car. There's a lot of common ground there. But it is funny because to us as readers now, these characters are hugely dissimilar. There's really not, like, for a comic book reader in 2019, there is basically nothing in common between I am the last son of an alien race who has powers because of our son and saves the world as an adult named Clark Kent and also Superman. And the other version, which is I am a 12 to 16 year old homeless newspaper selling kid who shouts a magic word that a wizard gave me and turns into like for us, those are totally different concepts. But if you put your brain back in like 1938 to 1940, they were sort of like, whoa, we just invented this. I'm wearing long underwear and I'm incredibly strong and pretty much bulletproof and do similar things. And DC, like as soon as they had Superman, they had to start fighting all of these knockoffs, some of which were definitely 100% knockoffs because there were a lot of shady people in comics and, you know, still continue to be. But especially back then, they were all like bootlegging half the time. That's a whole thing with paper supplies actually came in with like liquor bootlegging. Anyway, comics are shady. And DC from the very start was fending off imitations. So even though Shazam to us seems very, very different, they like one of their first cases came up before this particular judge with this crazy name, Billings Learned Hand, was the judge in one of these first cases that was like, clearly an infringement, strong guy, does all this stuff, you're doing Superman, you're not allowed to do that. And in 1941, I want to say, DC filed suit against Fawcett for their substantially similar Captain Marvel character, or what seemed at the time like, you know, a substantially similar one, who, by the way, over, as I'm sure y'all are also going to get into, at some point starts outselling Superman.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was the most top-selling comic for its time.
Mm-hmm. Becomes wildly popular, gets a whole extended family, basically invents the extended family of superheroes before Superman.
Right.
And there's all these reasons that you might be, like, not happy that this other magazine exists.
That would piss me off so much if I created Superman and someone bootlegged him and then it outsold me.
Oof.
Oh, that would be, anyways, they made up because they're both at the same franchise now, so that's cool. But
it all works
please
out happily
please
in
continue.
The end. But like, you know, the legal stuff takes forever, right? So the suit's filed in like 1941, and a decision doesn't come down until like 1948. And you can look into this. It is this totally bizarre technicality about whether DC shared the rights with this company that was helped publishing a newspaper comic and therefore had forfeited something about the copyright. So the weird thing is that first result comes down and Fawcett wins.
Wow.
There's this weird technicality that sort of says, like, oh, actually, we're throwing this out because of whatever. So obviously, DC appeals, or the company that we now know as DC, which was probably National Periodical at the time. That's the problem. Mm-hmm. Comic book company names change all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they appeal, and they land in front of Judge Billings Learned Hand, the same dude who, by this time, like 8 or 12 years earlier, had been on one of the very first Superman infringement cases, ends up the appeals guy who's looking at this, like, newly renewed fight. And he basically says, that technicality thing was dumb. It's obvious that they weren't, that this thing doesn't cause them to lose their copyright. And I do, looking at what you all presented, it seems clear that some level of copying existed. But essentially what he said is, I'm kicking it back down to the other courts, and to settle this, you need to find the specific examples. And that would mean both companies going through the entire history by this time, the like 12 to 14 years of publishing of each of these, to be like, the first time you bounced a bullet off your chest, the first time you jumped real high, the first time, and to sort of fight it out count by count.
Wow.
Now, since he'd also said, basically, you did establish that some level of copying existed, Fawcett but was sort of like, this doesn't look great for us. Because he's basically saying, you're going to lose at least some of this fight if you go back down to the lower courts and settle it all, right? And by this time, it is the early 1950s, and superheroes go out of style.
Yeah.
So already the circulation is falling. Already everybody's like, this superhero bubble is bursting. And we're not sure it's ever coming back. Now, comic book fans know that it's coming back. There's going to be a thing called the Silver Age. It's only a couple of years away. It's going to inject new life into comics and totally reinvent things. Spider-Man's going to get here. Hal Jordan and Barry Allen are going to get here. The X-Men and the Fantastic Four. It's all about to blow up. But in the early 50s, it looked like that part was dying. So essentially, Fawcett goes, okay, so it looks like we're going to lose if we fight this out. And these magazines aren't selling like they used to. So let's just basically call it a day. They had to pay, the rumor is, $400,000 plus costs to DC and agree to stop publishing their Captain Marvel character.
Didn't that put them out of business?
I believe that they either stopped doing, I don't 100% know. I feel like Fawcett Comics stopped being a thing, and I don't know to what extent.
Yeah, I know they had to fire there too. Fawcett shut down its comics division in the autumn of 1953 and fired its comic book staff. Yeah, so, and then two of them, Otto Binder and Kurt Schaffenberger, ended up at DC.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, being prominent members of the creative team for the Superman-related comics from 1954 through the 1960s. That to me is just funny that it's like, well, we got fired and now we're going to work on the thing that we were going up against. But yeah, so that that sounds like it shut them, at least their comics part.
So in the meantime, all these, so Billy Batson, aka Shazam, as I'm now finally used to calling him, because spoiler alert, that's just his name now, due to complicated shenanigans that will follow. All of his like supporting cast and family, like Mary Marvel and Captain Marvel Jr. and all that stuff, you eventually got Supergirl, I think co-created by Otto Binder, who had worked on all of the Captain Marvel stuff. You get all this talent is still there. They're still working on comics. Superman grows the rest of his family, so they sort of, the borrowing legacy is completed there. And they survive on in.
It's fascinating because those original comics that you're talking about, it says Shazam across the comic book, and then underneath it, it says the original Captain Marvel.
Now, I think that is the branding that they went with in the early 70s when DC got the rights.
Right, yeah.
So, like, a lot of things happened to Captain Marvel because he missed the 60s. It's one of those things that comic book fans talk about a lot where, essentially, he didn't have a Silver Age. He had a Golden Age. And then when he showed back up, we were in Bronze, which is, according to the way fans divide up the eras of comics, they sort of have different hallmarks. And Bronze was when they took the relatability and imagination and promise of the 60s, and they got sort of a little grittier with it in the Bronze Age. You get the Punisher in the Bronze Age. It's often you mark the beginning of the Bronze Age by the death of Gwen Stacy. But Shazam, this like beautiful, childlike, big red cheese of a character, had no sort of transitional period. So DC got the rights to him and brought him back, but it never 100% took off the way they wanted it to. And it's like, I was just thinking about this earlier, and I don't know how to connect these dots, but we always talk about that and him sort of missing that. And then we also talk about there's so many different approaches for handling the character who is sometimes a kid and sometimes an adult. And it's weird to me that he now echoes his own history because he had no middle period. He only had kid and adult. Mm-hmm. He missed a whole phase.
You might have covered this on the Captain Marvel episode. So where does Captain Marvel come in? Like, why did they go with Captain Marvel after all that?
Well, I think that he was originally Captain Marvel. I think they liked the name of it, to be honest, and it was a part of the Marvel family. It was, you know, before Marvel was Marvel. So I think it was just the word Marvel just sounded cool. Like, yeah. Oh, Captain Marvel.
And yeah, what you're getting at there, I think, is the other thing. What he missed while he was gone is that the company that had been Atlas and Timely rebranded itself as Marvel Comics and became just the biggest thing in the universe. So that's the other thing that happened in the 60s while he was off the scene, is that suddenly Marvel was strongly associated with comics, but it meant something totally different.
Right.
And like there's this weird, speaking of comics being shady, there's this other random tiny company that noticed in the mid-60s that nobody was using the Captain Marvel name, and they started this frankly terrible-looking superhero whose power is that he falls apart. Like, just all his limbs fly off, and then he fights
relatable.
it went like 4 or 5 issues, and they just kind of gave up. Marvel Comics, which by this time is getting very into, like, branding themselves. They've got the soapbox. They've got the Mary Marvel Marching Society. They were sort of like, we can't leave that name sitting around.
Right.
Somebody do something. And they got their own Captain Marvel, which they've had basically ever since. So that's what happened in the 60s.
I was going to say, what was funny to me in Captain Marvel, the film, is, you know, Mar-Vell, which is what was the original name, Mar-Vell. And it was funny when people were like, don't you think, like, I think people didn't make the connection and were like, isn't it awkward that they have to keep saying the name of their company? I was like, kind of, but also not really.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it is, but also, and then, you know, they like suggest Marvel sounds good, you know, and I'm just like, just, they're flying around. Nothing makes sense. It's chill. It's chill. The one comment before we move on that I wanted to say is the idea of a character whose limbs just fall apart reminds me of something from Action League Now.
Oh,
do you remember Kablam in Action League Now?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Those like hit. 90s Nickelodeon.
Someone was just showing me Kablam. Like,
yeah.
It was a thing that I missed
somehow.
Really?
Get so much my jam.
But my favorite was Melt Man with the power
Melt
to
Man.
Melt.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
So if I don't know if this is the right time for it, but the other hilarious thing that happened when Fawcett shut down is that there had been a company in England that was basically a big part of their business then was just to republish these very popular Captain Marvel adventures, right? And then all of a sudden, out of what seemed to them like nowhere, it was like, just kidding, there are no more. And so they sort of scrambled around and got one of their guys to be like, we need something to replace that strip. And that was the birth of a character called Marvel Man in the 1950s in England.
We need a thesaurus in here, to be honest.
So
these people need a thesaurus. There are other words you could have gone with.
So Mick Anglo creates Marvel Man, who shouts Kimota, which is the word atomic backwards, to transform into his alter ego.
Not like Shazam at all.
Definitely not. And I love that it's like someone literally just got sued over this, guys. But okay, so they do Marvel Man. That happens for a few years. Something happens. They go out of business. It's a little bit vague. But one British kid was like on vacation reading Young Marvel Man, which was their version of Captain Marvel Jr., you know, possibly similar but legally distinct. And his like it stayed in his little kid brain. And then he grew up and he became Alan Moore. And eventually he was like, I want to bring back that British superhero that I remember from being a kid. But here's what I think would happen, like in a dark, messed up version of that. Yada, yada, yada. That comic is called Marvel Man, which became Miracle Man when they published here, which got involved in a totally unrelated series of lawsuits.
Wow.
And long story short, those rights have now landed at Marvel.
Wow.
You know, I don't know why I thought you were going to be like, and that kid grew up to be Geoff Johns.
That would be amazing as well. I'm sure he has
I'm sure
like
he
has.
Oh, of course. Oh, yeah, because everyone that's involved, I feel like, in comic book writing grew up with comics.
Yeah.
Grew up with comics. We have to take a really quick break, and then we're going to break down the character of Shazam right when we come back.
All All right, welcome back, y'all, and we're back here with Danny and Amy, and we're gonna jump into this. So, you know, that was a fun factoid that you get to talk about with your friends as you sit outside the theater waiting to go in. It's wild, it's great, and now that's out of the way, let's talk about the product itself and start with Billy Batson. I think that's the one thing everybody knows about the movie now. And now about the property, which has been the same. And that's what I've kind of always liked about Shazam, is this hero seems like the one hero that you get to be like, you know, that kind of what it would be like if I had superheroes. And I'm excited about the movie kind of exploring that idea.
And I love that, because I feel like probably part of the reason it went over so well is that it is the most basic wish fulfillment of like, I'm a kid, I'm not strong, I can't fly, what if I had a magic word that made me Earth's mightiest mortal? Like, done. Everyone's just like, yep, in, go on. So Billy Batson has had several different origins. They've periodically revamped and tried to retell it, but they all have common DNA, which is that he is a kid. He is usually a homeless kid, or living in a foster home, occasionally living with like a mean uncle, generally an orphan. Billy Batson, who originally like a selling newspapers on the street in what I feel like in the 40s, where they were all like, we're all depression kids. This seems reasonable to us.
Yeah,
kids work. That's just a thing they do. Like, you know, these stories are, half of them are being written and drawn by 17-year-olds who've been supporting their families for years. So I feel like that seemed more normal back then, where now we're like, you put a kid in danger? Original Billy Batson is just a kid with a heart of gold who usually lives on the streets and meets a mysterious stranger who convinces him to go, in this case, the original one is into a subway tunnel. Where
it was
he gets
so
on.
Creepy. He's in a trench coat.
Yeah,
and it's
he's
like,
just a dude.
Especially if this comic is for kids. He's just like this shady dude in a trench coat. Yeah. Like, hey, kid, come down to the subway with me. I got something to show you.
It's a huge don't try this at home. But a mysterious figure shows up, calls him down. What I love about the mix of, like, because these comics are so unafraid of magic that they're just like, it's a magic subway. Why wouldn't it be a magic subway? He gets on a subway. It takes him off to a magical place we now know is the Rock of Eternity. He walks past these very menacing statues of the seven deadly sins of mankind. And he meets a second mysterious figure, the wizard Shazam, who tells him essentially, you are the candidate I've been looking for that I can invest my powers in. Essentially, I don't have long. You are the right candidate. Here's how it works. You say my name and you will be transformed. And his name, of course, is an extremely reasonable and normal acronym.
Yes.
It is, let's see.
Shazam. S for the wisdom of Solomon. H for the strength of Hercules. A for the stamina of Atlas. Z for the power of Zeus, including his ability to summon thunderbolts. A, courage of Achilles, and M, the speed of Mercury.
So originally that was just the wizard's name, Shazam!
Yeah.
And that's his word of power. His power gets shared eventually with the other members of the Shazam family, with Mary Marvel, with Captain Marvel Jr., who all have their own independent origins and kind of transformation personas. But that has more or less stayed consistent. Wizard, sins, magic word, mightiest mortal. One thing that has changed over time is that I think in part to set him apart from other characters, originally he was written as very much like when he turns into Shazam or what would have been Captain Marvel, he's a fully grown dude who's sort of like, oh, little Billy, that was a close one. And what he missed is that period in the 60s where we tried to get like psychologically realistic with comics. So people afterwards have been sort of trying to put the pieces together of like, are they two different people? Does he have a kid brain and an adult body? And what we're settling into now is much closer to the kid brain and the adult body thing. That wisdom of Solomon is like a sometimes feature. But
oh, right.
But it is interesting because that does set him apart, being essentially just like kid in a giant powerful
he's
body, and that's what they have
big.
Fun with now. Yeah,
superhero big. And then I was gonna say, so his family, the Marvel family, which later I think they moved to Shazam family.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, it took over
which sounds like a normal name to have on your mail. Just have everyone, this is it. You know, I think that's so funny about comics where I think we talked about this with in the Harley Quinn episode about how the villains, like Edward Enigma, and it was like, oh, I wonder who he is.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder who he is.
I do love that those original comics, they have that, like, a lot of, they get made fun of for being cheesy, but, like, they're so much fun to read, and there's so much fun goofiness in them, and they are so unafraid of things like an original character from those stories is Talky Tawny the Tiger. He is a tiger who talks.
Yeah.
That's his, he's not, like, you know, later on people would get embarrassed about stuff like that. They'd be like, we need to come up with a complicated reason that this tiger talks. And those comics were just like, I don't know, Hoppy the Marvel Bunny. That's
I was about
thing.
To say that. Yes, Hoppy the Marvel Bunny. So then let's dive in a little bit to his villains, because he has two super famous villains. And one of them that I thought was going to be, this isn't a spoiler. This is like, I thought he was going, I haven't seen the film yet, but I thought Black Adam was going to be, but Black Adam's getting a solo film.
Apparently, yeah.
And that might be The Rock.
It seems
it was
like
announced, but then The Rock is like in his own suit. Whatever is going on with Hobbs and Shaw, I'm like, what? Is this now a superhero? If he is the Fast and Furious franchise now a superhero franchise?
Oh yeah, 100%. Did you not see the new trailer where Idris Elba is now superhuman, and I'm here for it.
I love it. I love that he was like, oh, everyone's doing the superhero stuff. We should just make let's make our Fast and Furious thing just superheroed. Okay, so let's start with Black Adam.
Okay, so Black Adam actually had essentially one appearance in the Golden Age, and it's a fantastic story with a great ending that you kind of have to read to believe. But he was a really intriguing character. The idea behind Black Adam is that Billy is not the first champion that the wizards or the elders that he's associated with have chosen. They chose someone a few thousand years ago, and it went badly. This has been told a few different times, and Black Adam even spent some time as a hero, but usually he's just a villain that sort of represents what could go wrong if you chose the wrong candidate for this power. The very first origin is that, like, he went super corrupt and mad with power, they exiled him to the other side of the galaxy, and he literally has spent the intervening thousands of years flying here. That was, like, the all the explanation you needed in the Golden Age. But he has become the best known of the Shazam villains over time. So it was interesting when they went to make the movie where we were like, oh, okay, they're going to have Black Adam in it. Oh, my God, The Rock is going to be great. Although, for the record, he also would have been an amazing Captain Marvel.
Oh, yeah.
And so then they were like, oh, just kidding. It's going to be its own movie. And none of us know what that means yet.
I honestly, my opinion of that was, and I was talking to Dan, our producer, before this started, is The Rock is such a big, he has to be the star. You know what I mean? He's such a bit. He's the biggest movie star that there is, I feel like, out right now. Like, he sells like no one sells. So if you're going to put him in a movie, he needs to be the star of the movie and not. That was my opinion on it. They were like, oh, maybe we'll make him this side villain. And then they were like, oh, we're just going to give him his whole entire film.
Yeah.
I just want to know if he's still a villain in that film, or if they're doing like the,
oh, maybe
the potentially, I guess, but, like the briefly existing good guy version of him.
Well, I don't even know about that, but I think that they're starting to dabble more into, and this is what I do love, how it's told that he might be a villain, but it's like with Venom. Mm-hmm. Like, it's, but you're rooting for him.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So it's this solo film, but for some reason you're rooting for someone that you normally wouldn't necessarily be, depending on how it's told.
And they have a lot of room for that with the, I guess, semi-spoilers for the 2011 redo, or the 2011 to now era redo of the Shazam character.
Right.
We're finally just calling him Shazam because it simplifies matters. But they tweaked Billy for that. They gave him kind of a new, different family situation, but that still, like, comes clearly from that same legacy. But they added some new characters, who I love. And they've kind of gone with that version going forward. But they added some new dimensions to Black Adam's story that I wonder if our plans for, like, long-term how to make more out of that character. He's still villainous in that, but they give it some sort of, like, some interesting shading that I think might be what they're playing off in the long term.
Yeah, so the new 52 run, the 2011 run, I think is mainly what this film. Have you seen it already?
I have.
Okay, so Ivy and I haven't seen it. So yeah. Amy's not going to give anything away.
I'm going to be so careful.
But if we're it's okay, but we're so essentially that is in what they've based this current character, the film adaptation is based off of the new 52.
Definitely. Right? Like, the story isn't the same story exactly, but the mythology they're using for this film is very clearly that incarnation of Billy and his story.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
So Black Adam does he also say Shazam?
I believe that is also his magic word, yeah.
Okay, because he has S, the stamina of Shu, H, the speed of Hiru, A, the strength of Amon, Z, the wisdom of... Why does he have different... He got different elders?
I guess.
He was cursed from the beginning. See, this is not his fault.
It was
they gave Billy the good elders.
Yeah, before that was the Greek gods. These all seem like they're Egyptian deities.
Because he was sort of Egypt-based, and then they invented a country for him to be from so that they could kind of give it its own history. And they got involved, like, we haven't even talked about, there was a 70s Shazam TV show, and there was a female superhero they made up for that who then has become part of the mythology. Her name's Isis. That does not work out great for her in 2019.
Yeah. We're definitely going to get a name change by the movie.
They've folded that into sort of the fake country that they made up for Black Adam to be from. But I feel like even when Mary Marvel gets her powers, they give it different female goddesses for those letters to be from. I think it's just seemed fun is probably the reason. Or they were playing off the fact that he's supposed to be old enough that make using the Greek gods wouldn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
Weird coincidence, though.
Yeah.
Good job, Wizard.
All right, yeah. So, we did talk about our woes with The Rock not being there, but it seems like the villain that is going to be featured is Dr. Savannah. Can you tell us more about the comic book version of Dr. Savannah? Give some people some basis.
So, the comic book version of Dr. Savannah is one of the oldest supervillains in comics, and he started out as just your basic evil mad scientist. Apparently, his likeness was based on Max Schreck being Nosferatu. And it was just sort of like just a creepy faced dude who has bad idea plans for the world. He was less on the sort of extreme magic and monster society and other end, and more just a standard. I have plans for domination and lots of evil schemes, and I'm sinister and bald. Now the new 52 version of him is interesting because they're giving him this relationship with magic. Like the new 52 comics, he has this magic eye that lets him see through things and kind of gets him involved in the mythology side of it in sort of a more integrated way. But his basic deal has just usually been that he's a bad dude and Captain Marvel needs to stop him.
People aren't going to like this, but some of these pics, he looks a little like Heisenberg. and the doctor from Nightmare Before Christmas. Definitely. Sally. People love my impressions, Iffy. They love them.
Yeah. You know, they love it when you're present in the Discord. You know, before you were in there.
They had some real takes.
That's all I'm saying.
So there's also just, for the old school villains, you get some of the super out there ones. There's tons of weird monsters that he fights. There's literally the Monster Society of Evil that there have been a couple of versions of. There's like an evil little worm named Mr. Mind who speaks out of a speaker. This is, I have a book recommendation. There is a hardcover that's called The 75 Years of Shazam or something like that, that DC put out, that's just stories from different eras that kind of walk you through all of these different versions of the character. And so the Mr. Mind stuff in the Golden Age is some of the most fun, bonkers, like, this, what happened? He took over a movie studio and now he's trying to trap Captain Marvel into, like, it's this very, very bizarre and out there Golden Age delight. I love this character. I think it's really fun that a bunch of people are about to know who he is, and I just had to throw a shout out for all the weird stuff.
Do people still call him Captain Marvel?
We shouldn't, but we do.
Okay. It's a hard habit to break.
There's a solo series he has right now, and they made, they came really close to making a saying Captain Marvel joke, and they just sort of backed off, but we all know what's happening. But his name is Shazam now, and we're getting used to it, and he just, you know, can't say it.
Yeah.
I do love the fact that Brie Larson, who had the opening weekend of her film, like, went to the theaters and she had that picture of her, that iconic one now, where she's like drinking from a cup, like a soda cup, and then has some popcorn. And then Zachary Levi also took the same exact, and everyone tweeted like Captain Marvel's, you know.
Honestly,
it was so great.
I think it's beautiful because especially like 10, 15 years ago, if you told me Billy Batson and Carol Danvers are both getting movies, and not only are they both getting movies, they are coming out a month apart, I would have called you a liar. I would have been like, there's just no way that that is happening. I would love that, but it's not at all realistic. So anyway, I love the future. It gives us awesome things like two Captain Marvel movies back to back.
I know. It's such a beautiful thing and so much fun. I mean, man, it's a good time to be a comic book fan, I must say. But, you know, is it about that time? We're about to go on a quick break, and then we're going to come back, give a few closing thoughts, and then I'm going to hit you with a fun question that I'm going to wait till the moment that I ask it to let you know. See you after this break.
Oh, boy.
And we are back. So in January 2017, DC and New Line Cinema announced the Shazam film. Do you remember? I don't really quite remember when this was originally announced, like how everyone felt about it. Was it the same time that was Zachary announced also right away, or did we know?
I feel like it was a while before we got Zach Levi, which was, okay. He was kind of, for me, it was the puzzle piece that I was like, oh, okay, this is a really fun choice. I could be remembering that wrong. But because I remember being confused about, like, why they were separating the movies. And, you know, I had had my fan casting that I thought would be cool if Dwayne Johnson played him or, like, played both of them and all this. And I had time.
Oh, dang.
I just thought that would have been neat.
They should have. Look at you. That would have been so funny to have The Rock playing both Shazam and Black Adam. He would have been a Lupita. That would have been real fun. Really cool.
But I had time to wonder about that and let all that time pass. And then I was ready to be like, okay, but what are we actually doing when they cast Zachary Levi? And I was like, oh, ho, ho, this is going to be fun.
In July of that year, David F. Sandberg was confirmed as a director, which I thought was really cool and interesting. I mean, he's typically known for directing horror. He did Lights Out. We talked about this on our How We Got Here podcast, but my favorite thing ever is his Lights Out short. Which is terrifying and beautiful and under 3 minutes and just, so great. And then, he directed Lights Out. He did Annabelle, right? Is that correct?
Yep.
So it was an interesting choice that they picked him, but one, so far, a lot of the reviews have been really great about it. And then, yes, in October 27 of 2017, they cast Zachary Levi. And then Asher Angel, who plays Billy Batson, little Billy Batson. So, and then, of course, Dr. Savannah is Mark Strong.
Who is just fun to watch at all times,
mm-hmm.
But definitely was like, I'm excited for more folks to see the film because he was just like, I'm who now? Got it. Let's do this. He has a villainous energy is what I'm saying.
He's a very villainous person.
So where do you, we're not going to get into the film. We don't want to spoil anything.
Yeah, no spoilers.
But where do you see the DC, because there's so much change happening right now with it.
Not to totally just hijack, but I do think this is a good point to kind of discuss that this is, and I think just what both of y'all have been saying, a welcome change in the DC universe. And I've said this before. I think I said this on Collider Heroes, and I said this on another podcast before, that this is kind of DC's first foray into something fun, exciting, and not necessarily putting the same dark lens filter over all of their movies. So, yeah, what do you think of for the future, and what's another fun, not dark movie you think the DC should take on?
Ooh, it's an interesting question because, you know, if you sort of zoom out to all of DC history, they've done a bunch of different tones, and sometimes I feel like we get unfair where we're sort of like, if the last several films have been this thing, we feel like they've never done anything else.
And, but the last several ones were Aquaman, which wasn't, and Wonder Woman, which wasn't,
absolutely.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
Wonder Woman I still view as a war...
A
period piece.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. And it was, pat my own self on the back. The reason I think the last few films were successful were two major things. The one thing that I'm going to pat myself on the back is I said what Marvel was doing right is that they choose a genre for their films. You can even go back to, I think, during the MCU episode, I bring that up. And that's what they've done. They took Wonder Woman and was like, this is going to be a World War II war movie. Because if you just took out Wonder Woman and just put like a general in her position, that could be any war movie, you know. And the fact it just happened to have a superhero, and that's, I think, every good superhero movie just happens to have a superhero. I haven't seen Aquaman yet, but it seems like a fun water romp or whatever.
Water romp.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's what I'm going to call it. And this is going to be a fun coming-of-age film, and that's why these three are so successful. I don't think there's anything wrong with Dark. I think the Dark Knight trilogy is great, you know, albeit a little overrated. You know, I think, you know, I think the Dark Knight was phenomenal and carried the other two up in how much everyone likes them. I think the Dark Knight was great and amazing. I think Dark Knight
Begins is not underrated.
Tell
him.
That thing is over. I mean, it was a great entry, but
here's where I totally agree with you. I love those movies, but I do think that it was sort of a mistake in the aftermath of them to assume that all movies needed to be those movies.
Oh, yeah.
Those movies were those movies.
And
the truth is that, like, comics is not a genre. Comics is a medium.
Thank
Superheroes is closer to a genre.
But
the
not.
Truth is that even within that, you get better stories when you let them, like, you know, I think that... You don't need to, like, be embarrassed about being a superhero movie. You don't need to be like, it doesn't even matter if they have powers. You can let the powers be part of the fun and the magic. And
please, for the love of God, don't ask your fans to wake up. You came into our world. You came into our medium. You're making stuff based off of what we liked. You need to wake up, Zack Snyder. I'm sorry, but I'm the biggest, as a creative, that made me scoff so hard, because it's like, you can't come into someone's subculture and be like, oh no, y'all need to wake up, this is how it should be done, because it's like, no bro, we're telling you you're doing it wrong, and you are. So what, Batman killed that one? It is funny, because it is the thing where it's like, yeah, it's not the biggest deal. Like, there can be a Batman that kills. We can do that. We can establish that. I don't think any change is there. But to, like, yell at everyone and just basically, like, he truly did insult fans. He literally said, you know, and then when you lost your virginity, it's like, we really doing that? You are literally the same jock who goofed on nerds making movies for us, and you just revealed yourself.
It really was not that, like, they were not nice things to say, and it was weird where it was sort of like what you just said, like, but that is how fans talk to each other, but, like, you know, maybe when we're younger and before we think through how our words make other people feel. I don't know.
I was going to say, I had a whole thread on my thing that Coy, actually your co-host, wrote me. He was like, I'm thinking of you right now with these Punisher comments. Because all I wanted to say was, it wasn't that I mean, Batman has killed. Don't at me, but he has, like, canonically. And also, I mean, if you're counting all the people he's punched off a building that we don't know if they lived or not, to me, I consider those casualties. But whatever.
It's part of the premise of the fiction is that, like, you know, if Batman just routinely kills people, then Dark Knight Returns, which Snyder and everybody else loves, including me, part of the premise of that film is, like, what if Batman could, like, killed? Like, or not film. Part of the premise of that story is that line.
Right.
And if the line doesn't exist, then the story doesn't mean anything. So maybe we participate in the fiction. Maybe we let that be the case. Like, it doesn't make you dumb to believe in premises of a story.
I think I agree. I think for me, it's, I'm okay with people taking risks of, like, what would it look like if Batman were like this?
Sure, the what if of it all is totally legit.
Yeah, and there are actually comics that do that with him. You know, there are lines that do that, what if this happened with Batman? For me, like, because people were tweeting at me, like, he has a code. I'm like, so do doctors and police officers. Like, you know, people, he's also human, which I like to remind people of. He's one of my favorite characters, which another thing I had to keep reminding people of when people got mad, because I was like, no, I love him. I love that he's human and that he's flawed and that he makes mistakes. For me, but, like, hearing from so many people, like you were saying, Iffy, I heard from so many fans that were like, no, this is so important to us. I was like, okay, I get it now. Like, I get it that also another thing is the world is so horrific already. Why can't we just believe in this man that dresses up like a bat and doesn't kill people?
Yeah.
And so for me, I'm like, sure, fine. You know what? We're already believing a billionaire dresses up like a bat. Why not we just go the extra step and believe that he doesn't kill? So
that's exactly the case. It does feel a little bit like you go back in time to Superman the movie and you're just like, anyone who believes a man can fly is a sucker. And it's just like, what? No, that's not.
Yeah, that's, and I think that's what it is. It's not even necessarily exploring that or all that. That's fine. I think it's the fact that he's like, y'all, the fact that y'all would question why I would move from the source material. This is dumb. Like, he basically said Batman's code is dumb. And I think that's what drove people crazy.
It's, I do, like, feel bad, though, because the man is allowed to have opinions on Batman.
I mean, and also, they're always bad.
For me, I know. And
they're always bad. I'm
we're
sorry.
Probably going to have this a bunch
is,
of people.
No, no, don't come at me. And this is the perfect just desserts for everyone who was asking for the Snyder Cut, because I know the people who are annoyed by this. I know there's some Snyder Cut folks who are like, yeah, but the people who are annoyed by this are also Snyder Cut folks. You asked for this. Is this your king? Is this your king?
If they do like it, it's a difference of opinion. I might not agree with it, but like that's what, anyway, I don't know. That's a separate discussion.
It is a separate discussion. I think one thing that I feel like we always seem to agree on is I am glad when someone finds joy in a film. Yes. So even if I didn't find joy in a film, I'm glad that somebody, that it resonated with someone.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And another thing is, for me personally, I don't mind when filmmakers take risks or want to see a different story. But also, we have Dragon Ball Evolution, yeah. So I shouldn't talk. Well, so, my
thing is, like, I, and just because I want to truly, like, just so no one's confused, I have no problems with people taking that risk, but I have a big problem when people don't respect the source material, when people are kind of spitting on who you're serving to, because at the end of the day, those are your fans that you're calling virgins and sitting in front and telling to wake up. It's like, and the same thing, I mean, if we're going way back when, who was it? I think it might have been Azzarello, who was like challenging someone at a panel, and it's like, all these corny comic dudes who like talk this machismo. It's like, I grew up in that life, and if we want to play that game, catch my fate outside of Hall H. But we don't want to do that. We don't want to do that. We just want to, just take the criticism and succinctly say why, instead of trying to be an insulter, because I'm the best at that. And then if I hop in that panel, it's going to be a much different one. When you're talking to the crowd and no one's challenging you, but if it's me, toe-to-toe Zack Snyder roast battle, I'll send you home crying. Like, that's the, and I'm, I, it, it's just like, it's insulting to have, it's almost as if I walked into a restaurant and I ordered a steak and the waiter's like, oh, you ordered a steak? Dummy. That's what it feels like when the
speaking
creator,
as a person who's worked at a comic shop for many years, it is like the besetting sin of comic shops that people are like, oh, you want that? Well, that's terrible. And it's like, and we see what happens. Yeah. It creates a culture no one wants.
Yeah.
Don't be that guy. Don't be that guy behind the counter. Don't be that guy in a conversation. I don't know. Just be nice, y'all.
Yeah. But in the end, you know, I hope, you know, whatever Batman movie you like, I hope you get what you want out of it. But the second thing I never mentioned that made all these recent films good, what's the one thing that was different about all these films besides just the direction they took? They used different directors.
Hmm.
You had different eyes, different visions on it. The reason the DCEU is so dark and gloomy is because you got the dark and gloomy, you got the regional managers of Hot Topics directing all of the, you know, the whole universe. So yeah, all the movies look the same. And that's the thing I was saying on, I think it was Screen Junkies SJU, where it was like, the reason Suicide Squad had no chance at succeeding is because what made Suicide Squad the comic so crazy is because it's such a dark turn on this thing. Like, DC comics are dark, but Suicide Squad was dark. Mm-hmm. You had a suicidal lead of a team who was going to do these missions where they weren't supposed to come, and that's dark. But if all your movies are dark, how is this going to pop out of your collection of movies? So now if you have movies like Aquaman, Wonder Woman, and Shazam out there, and you do this new Suicide Squad that Gunn's working on, it's going to pop when you see it, because you're going to be like, oh, this is dark.
And I know, like, even that film has people who found a ton of joy in it.
Yeah.
But
oh,
you
yeah.
make, like, there is a strong case to be made for, like, let the different parts of the universe be different. Let them
yes.
embrace what's good about them. Mm-hmm. Billy Batson doesn't need to be involved in any discussions about heroes killing people.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's let this be what it is. And in terms of what it means for the future, I hope that people love and find this film. I hope that they enjoy. Like, I love that they got a horror guy because there's an element of fantasy and mythology to it. Like what we talked about earlier, those comics were never afraid to be like, you literally got your powers from a wizard.
Yeah.
You're still going to fight Nazis and do all the normal Golden Age comic stuff, but we're not afraid of the, like, of monsters and out there stuff. And I feel like there's so much more they can do there that I am excited, hopefully, we'll get to see happen. But the other thing is, like, don't put all that weight on one movie. Just let this movie be a good time at the movies.
There was so much weight on Wonder Woman. When you think of how she...
It was terrifying.
Well, when you think of how she blew everyone out of the water and how Patty Jenkins, like, just how amazing that film was. But everything was riding on that film. Yeah. You know, and it's... and
luckily, she's Wonder Woman, so she was up to it.
That's true. It's true. Oh, I love her so much. On Heroes, Amy and I just got to geek out about Wonder Woman. I mean, she's my, aside from the Dragon Ball tattoo, that was the other tattoo I was thinking of getting. Yeah. Mm. Wonder Woman is my everything that I aspire to be. Actually, not, because I post like thirst traps and cuss all the time, which I don't know. Well, you know, I think she'll be down. Like, I think 2019's Wonder Woman would be down.
Yeah.
For that.
So the last question I want to ask Amy actually has just a simple question that I think will help a lot of listeners. Someone slid into my DMs recently. It was Tomiwa, @AOTomiwaT_ on Twitter. And he said, hey, man, love Nerdificent. You do, as you said, love what you do on Nerdificent. Question, do you read the Marvel DC comics regularly or as religiously as I hope? I'm like a whole ass year behind on comics, maybe even more than that. And I wanted to know if you have opinions on where I can jump right in without missing too much. To which I replied, yo, in all caps, I'm in the same position, but I'm getting the answer to your question from Amy Dallin. Aww. So we're in good hands. I'll let you know.
Oh, that's so awesome. Depends on what you are looking for. There used to be a rule in comics. Every comic is someone's first. And it was one of those, like, whatever you're doing, make sure somebody can jump in right now. And obviously these days, because we have most things get collected in trade paperbacks, most things you expect, like, they call it writing for the trade, where now people are planning out a lot of arcs and they're sort of, like, assuming that you'll try to catch up. So essentially, finding any number one is designed to be a good jumping on point for folks. But all of the people making these are working really hard to try and give a good jumping on point every few months for every book. It's an impossible challenge, but that's what they try to do. So if you're specifically like about a year behind and you just want to marathon some stuff, both of the major companies have services you can look at. Marvel Unlimited has a subscription thing where you can digitally read basically everything 6 months old and older. So if there's like a story from the last couple of years you really want to catch up on, first of all, your local library might have that trade paperback. Second of all, your local comic book store might be able to find that for you. But third of all, you can just pop around on Marvel Unlimited and look for that. DC has DC Universe, and that one is more curating, like, especially if you just don't know where to start with a character, they're doing lists of, like, best Batman story, how to meet the Doom Patrol if you're watching the TV show on DC Universe. They're sort of curating a rotating collection over there for that. Now, if you have a friendly local comic book store, go in, ask. If they're not nice, find a different one. But I promise a lot of us are nice, and we're really excited for you to be there and read some books. Pay attention to the company's social media because they're working really hard these days to be like, here's our latest press release about the exciting thing that's happening in a couple of months. So they just announced that Jonathan Hickman, who's a writer who has been indie only for the last couple of years, he's coming back to Marvel. Ooh. He's doing some X-Men stories, ooh, and that's kicking off in July. They just announced it at the Chicago Con.
Oh, I'm so excited. If you don't know, Hickman was writing Future Foundation for a bit, which was the continuation of the Fantastic Four when it was like their whole family, and it was so good. He's very good at almost everything, but I like when he takes on teams, so I'm excited for him being on X-Men.
The key is, like, don't let it scare you. There's no wrong place. There's just, like, whatever calls to you, like, back up to the beginning of an arc, or if they find out when the writer who's currently on there took over, and that's usually been designed as a place for you to jump in. They want you to start reading their books. You don't need to know everything. You don't need to read everything. Libraries can help. The internet can help. Your friendly local comic store can help. Comixology has an unlimited service that's just a bunch of stuff you can borrow to read and check out. If you have an Amazon Prime membership, I think you get free Comixology Unlimited with that.
Oh, wow. I need to look into that.
Yeah, and, like, If you want to try a random indie, Image Comics has a thing where nearly all of their volume ones are $9.99 now. So you can basically just try half a year of the book to see if you dig it. So yeah, there's just no wrong answer. It depends. Like, figure out if there's a character you want to check on. Just ask around and it'll be like, oh yeah, just 4 months ago, they started a new Shazam book. He hasn't had his own solo book in years. That started. Number 4's out this week. This is a perfect place to start.
Perfect. Well,
there we go.
That was the answer. And I guess the next question is, where can people find you?
Oh, thank you. I am at Enthusiamy all over the internet, like enthusiast, but my name. You get used to it, I promise. And it's been really awesome to be here. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for stopping by. It was good chatting with you. And me, as you know, I'm Ify Wadiwe on Twitter and Instagram, IFYNWADIWE. IFD's on Twitch. Lots of nerd fam coming through with them Twitch Prime subs. So keep the love coming. And remember, you got to come back every month. It doesn't do it by itself. I need you. I need you. I promise you, I need you. And the Discord, discord.gg/saltsquad, if you want to continue the convo. Danny was in there talking up a storm this morning. She was ready to blow off some steam. So definitely come in there. And also, go to TeePublic. We're already, you know, DJ Dan has already been like, look, we got to get some more of these t-shirts, and I got these ideas. So you're going to see some new t-shirts cooked up and ready for you to wear and meet us, because it's almost SDCC. And, you know, I don't know where we're going to meet, but we're definitely going to have to meet.
We're meeting up.
Yeah, no matter what, we're meeting up, Sin. And anyone who doesn't have a Nerdificent shirt, I'm not going to talk to
you. No, that's not, I will talk to you. but also, if you send us pictures of you in your shirt, we will repost them on our Instagram. So that's really cool. I'm at Ms. Danny Fernandez. I was in Discord because we had that discussion with Bechdel cast member last week, and we were talking about Steven Spielberg and his comments on Netflix, and then lo and behold, he's a part of Apple Plus. Anyways, I am on a new show on Verve with Open Mike Eagle. He has a show at Comedy Central called New Negroes, which is really cool, and we have a wizarding show where we play two wizards who go to Wizarding Community College because we didn't get into Hogwarts.
It's
insane. Paul F. Tompkins is in it. Baron Vaughn from Grace and Frankie and New Negroes. And gosh, who else? Yadoye Travis from Dark Tank. So many people are in. Jamie Loftus. I think Carl. It has a lot of How Stuff Works alumni. Jamie Loftus is on it. Carl Tart, I believe, plays our dog. Dean. We have a Dean that's a dog. And the only reason I say I think is because he had to do VO for it, so I was not there, but I was there with the dog. It's really great. Yeah, we played two wizards in a wizarding magic school, so check it out. It's on Verve right now. And I think that's it. Like we always say, stay nerdy.